As you've been told, as you probably knew before you came, the theme for the week, or actually a two-week period beginning today, is dialogue between the generations. And I think it was the hope of those who planned the period that more of you would bring your parents along. Most of the high school youth who are here are without their own parents. The intention was that this would be a time of discussing relationships between actually three generations, I guess, including grandparents, and even the larger family. But the way it's worked out, we're going to be borrowing as pseudo-parents, some adults who are not yet parents, and also some who are parents but are not parents of teenagers. We're going to be making use of you two kinds of people in group discussions, and we think it will probably work out all right anyway. I'll explain later what we'll be doing. A kind of overview of this week, since most of you will be here only this week. Today is a kind of introductory session. I'm not going to be saying anything very profound, but I'm going to be saying some general things about conflicts between the generations, and I can speak as an expert because I'm not yet a parent of a teenager, and this helps a great deal, and I hope nobody will remember what I say today and remind me 5 years from now. Tomorrow's topic, then, will be the area of money conflicts. Ray Johnson will be leading the discussions tomorrow. The following 2 days will be devoted to roles within the family, the different relationships that are present typically in the family, and on Friday, the area of sex as an area of tension or conflict between the generations. Today, the topic we're talking about is the general one of conflicts. We're caught in our conflicts. By the way, you'll be getting an outline later, probably this morning at the coffee break, of the whole week. Mr. Johnson will have two of the days, two of the topics. Pastor Bull from the ALC Board of Social Service will have the other two, and he'll be coming in tomorrow, I believe. If you can't read what's on the board behind me, either because it's too small, the light is bad, or because I'm standing in the way, don't worry about it. We'll look at these items later, and I'll read them as we move through the list. The one thing I want to say this morning, before we divide into groups, is something about the fact of conflict being inevitable. That it is not only inevitable, but it's desirable between the generations, because if you don't have it, you have more trouble. I was a teenager myself, not too long ago, and I can remember that this was troublesome in my home, both to my parents and to my brothers and myself. But I also know, and you've probably heard this too, that once you get away and become a kind of independent, autonomous being, then you can come back and relate again with your parents in a pretty healthy way. At least most people are able to do this. So that the gulf that is wide maybe is widest just before the healing reconciliation occurs. In some families, perhaps it isn't very wide during these years. But in the experience of most of us, it is. It's probably always been thus. At any rate, people have always said that young people are going to the dogs. And I guess you have to say that it's they always have been. They aren't going to the dogs any worse or any faster in this generation than in any other. We use expressions which suggest the gulf, the rift that exists. Parents talk about things like flaming youth number of decades ago, or the lost generation in the 30s.
Parents like to speak about irresponsible youth, about going to the dogs. Youth are headed for trouble. This kind of language is used by the adult world about youth, it seems, in every generation. And at the same time, youth talk about old fogies and out of date and old fashioned and parents who don't understand. You don't understand. This is said millions of times, I suppose, every day in America. You don't understand me. And the implication is that you never will understand because you aren't of my generation. And this is probably true. Along with these phrases we use about each other and against each other, there is the fact that times do change. And when you say things aren't the same that they were when you were young, they're speaking the truth. Things are not the same. And again, they never were. The times never are really what they were a generation before. Since you were our age, things have changed. You can say this no matter what age you are and what generation you represent. If you're speaking to an older generation, things are not the same. The changes today, the social changes, the changes in the society in which we live are probably more rapid and more extensive than ever before. There may be this difference. Things change more rapidly nowadays. On social change, particularly, youth are likely to be more open, more able to adjust than their parents. This is obvious. Parents, the parental generation, has more invested in the status quo. Those who are older have a need and have created a need by living through the years to keep things pretty much the way they are. This varies from individual to individual, of course, but in general, the older generation is less able to face social change. One of the passages we looked at in Bible study this morning reminded us of that line in Acts, which I think comes from Joel, that your sons and daughters will prophesy. And I think one meaning of this word is that today many homes have prophets in them who are the sons and daughters. I could give one example of this from personal history, personal experience of a few months ago. I was called into an area in Bloomington, Minnesota, where I live, and where a non-white family was buying in to the neighborhood, and there was the promise of trouble. And I was talking with one family about this, and they were relatively able to accept this fact of change, the first non-white family coming in. And they said they were able to accept it and to see it as not damaging necessarily, as rather healthy because of the ministry of their two teenage daughters to the parents. These two young people had been in a high school situation during that year, during the past school year, in which they had been led to certain conclusions and changes in attitude, which they had then transmitted to their parents. And because of the kind of healing that the daughters had administered to the parents credited the daughters with this and said they were able to accept this change, which to most Americans is a rather significant break with what they've been used to. I think this kind of ministry and social change is being carried on by young people today in many homes to their parents. And it's one of the prophetic roles the young can play to the older generation. Well, this is just one example of the areas of conflict that can occur within the family, the disagreement over what's happening in the world and whether it's good or bad. Secondly, then, conflict is not just inevitable. It's, I think, desirable. Now, from the viewpoint of the parents, it is probably not always seen as desirable. Parents are usually more troubled by the evidences of conflict, because they have they can remember years when there was very little conflict, or at least when their rule, their will was able to gain the reigning power. And as adolescence comes upon them, that is, as the parents have adolescence in the home, it becomes more difficult for them always to rule, always to win. But I think from the perspective of youth, conflict is necessary as a sign of growing independence. If there were no conflict, in other words, youth would have to create some. They have to have conflict as a sign, as a symbol of something. And I think in relatively peaceful families where there really isn't much conflict, youth do create certain evidences of conflict. To most high schoolers, parents are symbols. They're more than just their parents. They're symbols of the entire adult world. An example of this, the way youth must create a kind of conflict or a difference of opinion if it doesn't exist. Most youth can't stand to have their parents share all of their views, their likes, their tastes, their fads, their fashions. They just don't want it this way. Styles in pop music and dance, I think, are an example. If you find that your parents share all of your views about what is good in music and in styles of dance and other folk ways, you soon change. You soon change the fashion. When the world of adults accepted the twist, youth abandoned it. The craze for the Beatles has been explained as being in large measure explainable by the amount of parental disapproval. And when parents scream about a certain hairstyle, then youth more and more adopt it. It's one rather harmless way of expressing a kind of rebellion, an over-againstness with regard to the adult world, which youth have to express. You've got to have it as a symbol of the fact that you are a growing, independent person, increasingly independent person. It follows, then, that the best way for parents to smother a teenage craze they don't like is to speak warmly about it and to accept it as their own. When parents embrace it and make it their own, then youth abandon it. This is, of course, a generalization, but I think it's true in the area of the rather harmless fads and fashions. Youth of high school age particularly have a need that they must be out ahead in some way that they consider important, ahead of their parents. They have to be able to demonstrate that in some way they are ahead. Well, I think in seeing this need for conflict between the generations, this need for over-againstness, youth are more perceiving than their parents are about the truth of how human personality develops. Because where there is no conflict, and sometimes you find that there is no conflict within a family, quite often one of two things is happening. Sometimes it is that the parents are insisting that their children be carbon copies of themselves. Now this is, of course, unwise because it thwarts freedom and individuality. And not only that, it's virtually impossible. At some point, usually, the rebellion will come, and then it may be a total and long-lasting rebellion. On the other hand, you sometimes see no apparent conflict because the parents try to be just like their youth, just like their children, to out-teenage the teenagers. And this is rather ludicrous. You've seen it, I'm sure, where the mother of a high school girl makes herself look silly by adopting the hairstyles, the fashions, even the male idols of her daughter, worshiping the same singers, the same movie stars. On the other hand, the teenage boy who wants his father to be a pal doesn't want him to act like a peer. And there's a difference. He doesn't want his father to act like he's of his generation. I think this means then that sometimes a parent has to act older than he feels. He has to act older than he feels. Because youth insists that he be recognizably older. Youth want him to be of a generation which is older. But not too much older. I don't know what the fine line is here. And 5 years from now, I'll probably be less sure. But I think it is true that youth have to have a kind of gulf. They have to feel that in some ways they're out ahead. They have to feel that in some ways their parents are old fogies. Otherwise, where is the proof that they are maturing and that they are of a new generation and that they are becoming independent, autonomous people who don't, at least completely, need their parents anymore? Well, if conflict is inevitable and is desirable, it must also be livable. It must be endurable. We must be able to live with it. And of course we do. But I think it depends on the communication systems remaining open. This too is obvious. You can live with a lot of conflict if you have it out in the open where you can talk about it, where you can share it and discuss it. Conflict becomes unbearable when it's unspoken, when it's there as a hidden, devious, mysterious thing that can disrupt from within. Because you're never sure of each other then. Now, some of the findings of Lutheran Youth Research, which I'm sure you've heard about, it was a survey conducted, the work is still going on, but the initial survey was conducted about 5 years ago among youth of the American Lutheran Church, and it was later duplicated among Missouri Synod youth, high school youth. In the area of youth and parent conflicts, the findings were rather surprising. At least I think the dramatic nature of them was surprising to most people, because it was apparent that in family relations among these youth, what bothered the young people most is not what the adults thought it was. Both groups, adults and youth, had a different conception. Each group had its own conception of what bothered youth the most, and very seldom did the two agree in specific areas. Now, I put some of these on the board. These five in each column are statements from the Lutheran Youth Research Inventory to which youth responded in terms of degree of concern. They were asked to respond to these items and many others. In fact, there were about 50 items in the area of family relations. They were asked to respond whether statements such as, I'm not as considerate of my family as I should be, whether this was true to a great degree, somewhat, very little, not at all, no longer. There were five or six possible responses. Well, when the responses from the entire sample were all put together and you got a consensus ranking of these various items, the five on your left were the ones that youth felt were the of the greatest concern. So that they went this way in the responses of youth. The one which received the greatest amount of indication of concern was, I'm not as considerate of my family as I should be. The one which was second highest in concern for youth was, I often think of my parents dying. Third, my parents have forgotten how it feels to be young. Fourth, I spend my money foolishly. And fifth, I often talk disrespectfully of my parents. I remember there were about 50 items that could be responded to, and because there were that many, some of these are rather specific and seem perhaps picayune. But there was a whole variety of items, and people responded as they felt. Parents or adults in the congregation responded to the same series of items as they felt youth would. In other words, the adult estimate of youth's concern was also measured. Not how the adults themselves felt, but how they felt the youth would respond. So that this was the youth concern ranking. This side over here would be the adult estimate of it. And they scored the items, responded to the items independently. This is the way it looked. Out of 50 items, adults felt that youth would rank this. I mean, the consensus feeling was they would rank it 22nd. Adults felt that youth would rank this item 40th. Great spread there. There was pretty close agreement on this item. My parents have forgotten how it feels to be young. I guess adults have heard this said so much, you don't remember what it's like to be young, that they feel that that's what youth will rate highly. There was rather close agreement there. On I spend my money foolishly, 36th in the estimate of adults. I often talk disrespectfully of my parents, 13th, not so great a spread there. The items on this side, then, are the five top items as parents felt youth would rank them. In the estimate of adults, youth would rank in first place. My parents are very strict about what time I come in at night. This is the adult estimate now. Second, my parents will not let me make my own decisions. Third, my parents don't understand my dating problems. Fourth, it's hard to discuss problems with my father. Fifth, my parents have forgotten how it feels to be young. Well, as you would guess, the same difference, the same spread of ranking was true on this side. Where youth actually ranked these was like this. My parents are very strict about what time I come in at night. Youth ranked at 34th, pretty well down the list of 50. My parents will not let me make my own decisions. They rank 25th. My parents do not understand my dating problems, 37th. This is not of as great concern to the youth as the parents thought it would be, by a wide margin. It's hard to discuss problems with my father, 28th. My parents have forgotten how it feels to be young. Well, this is just the reverse of the same item over there. This is the only item that both groups had in the top five. It was an agreement ratio of 1 in 5. Now, I suppose that one reason for this lack of agreement was inadequate communication. It must be said that some slackening off in telling the folks everything, which most of us do as young children, is normal as we become adolescents. And parents are often wounded by this. They don't understand it. They say, well, you aren't as open with me as you used to be. You don't tell me everything the way you used to. And sometimes a parent will try to undo this hurt by prying, by seeking information, by trying to dig it out, and the adolescent closes up all the more because it looks like simple snooping to the son or daughter, and the alienation grows. The relationship is better served by an occasional companionable chat than by a barrage of questions as soon as the young person sets foot inside the door. Where have you been? Or what have you been doing out so late? This is easy to say, but I suppose most parents wind up with the barrage of questions when the information doesn't come, rather than wait patiently for the companionable chat. I think I'll stop here and divide you into groups and let you go to discuss. We're going to try to construct groups which will have both youth and adults in them. And the adults in the group will have to pretend that they are parents of youth, or at least that they represent the parental generation. I think we can divide you this way. Some of you may feel in between, but if we ask you to put yourselves, and we'll number off separately so that you are in two groups, or two kinds of people in the same groups, if you will put yourselves on one side or the other of that imaginary line which represents independence from the home in which you grew up, if you are still within that family in which you grew up, still feel that you are something shy of total independence of that family, then put yourself in the category of youth, so that those who are away at college or going away to college, you have to decide which group you want to be in here. Those who feel that they are on the other side, you number yourself with the parents. We'll number, I think, from 1 through 8, so that we'll have 8 groups. And we'll number first with the youth. So this first time through the group, if you consider yourself in the parental generation, if you want to represent that wing here, then pass. Don't state a number. Are you clear on this procedure? We're going to go through the group first, asking the youth to number themselves 1 to 8, and then you start over with 1 again.